This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, folks, welcome to the People Speak radio show here on BBS Radio. This is your guest host, Charles Giuliani, again filling in this week for Basima, who's away. We've got two special guests this evening. One of them isn't quite with us yet. He'll be joining us in another few minutes. But our guests are the producer and director of a new film that's just coming out as we speak. It's called The End of Poverty. A fantastic documentary talking about the real reasons why there are so many poor countries around the world and why this problem continues to perpetuate, and what can really be done to stop this plague on our planet. It's unnecessary, totally unnecessary, but I don't want to give that away. I want to let our guests tell you about that. Felipe Diaz is the director. He's the one who will be joining us in a few minutes. And the producer of the film, Beth Portello, is here right now. So let me go ahead and introduce her. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you so much for having me, Charles.
Great to have you. This is a fantastic work you're doing. There really needs to be an awareness created about this subject, because a lot of people in this country particularly tend to think that world poverty is something that has resulted from incompetence, people's inability to know how to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, it's because of bad decisions that they've made or just the area of the world that they live in. But that's not true at all, is it?
No, it's not, and you're exactly right, especially in America, where we're so infused with the Horatio Alger belief that if you just try hard enough, it will, you can make it. And, I'm American born and bred and had that very much as part of my education system in the public system. And this experience traveling to the countries that we filmed in Venezuela, Brazil, Bolivia, Tanzania, and Kenya. And by the time we got to Kenya, we had done Latin America first, and we'd been to all the favelas, we've been to barrios, we've been, lots of poverty work. But when I got to Kibera, which is in Kenya, and it's just outside of Nairobi, it's the slum that's featured in The Constant Gardener, that film with Rachel Weisz. I was standing there, and Kibera is, like I said, the largest slum in East Africa. There's about 1 million people that are estimated to live there, and it probably covers 10 blocks, like 10 city blocks square. You can imagine the density of humanity.
Right.
And I was standing there like at the train tracks that you see in the movie, and I was just overwhelmed, and I realized if I was born into this, there is absolutely no way I could get out. I mean, there's no way. You're just, it's just impossible, because there's none of the tools that you have in America in those countries, even though they're deemed, quote-unquote, developing countries or more developed than other countries. I mean, specifically Kenya. So it really is daunting, and those of us in America, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, we do believe that, it's their fault that they're poor.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, that's,
because they're lazy, or, they have too many babies, or their government's corrupt, or any of those types of things. So
it's their fault, or they don't know what they're doing, or, there's a lack of sympathy stemming from a lack of understanding of what's really going on. And we tend to think of imperialism, quote unquote, as a thing of the past that faded out in the World War II era. But that certainly is not the case. It's continued, but it's sort of disguised.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
not only is it continued, I they've upped the ante. It's gotten worse, if you ask me.
It's true, and especially what the film really points out is our economic system, which is capitalism. Since colonial times, exists to extract cheap labor and cheap resources. I mean, that's why we went to go get the gold to finance the Spanish Empire, right?
Right.
And ever since then, I mean, it's the same thing. Now we just go get the natural resources to finance Americans' lifestyle.
Well, I mean, the irony is that a lot of these poor countries, in fact, pretty much all of them, if you look at them, you scratch your head in wonderment once you understand what resources they have. You know, a lot of the South African countries, of course, have some of the richest gold and diamond mines in the world, and Brazil is loaded with mineral resources, and, you know, Haiti has some of the blackest, richest volcanic soil on the planet, great for agriculture. You know, these countries shouldn't be poor.
It's
true. There's something going on, you know.
Right, it's the resource curse, many of these countries. You know, as soon as we have identified that they have these resources, we being the North, whether it's Europe or the United States or, you know, and we have historically gone into these countries and created situations so that we could then take control of these resources. And you continue to see it, you know, even modern times. I mean, let's look at Iraq, you know.
Yeah,
is that really about weapons of mass deception?
Sums it up, right. I first became aware of this problem years ago. There was a book, you've probably heard of it. It came out, I think, in 1976, 77. I found it at a used book sale. It was called How the Other Half Dies. Very interesting title.
Mm-hmm.
And it just caught my eye. I'm like, gee, what's that about? Oh, it was unbelievable. And, of course, this is decades old now, but the same problems that the book brought out still apply today. It's the same story, and it's about this very theme of your film.
It's true. I mean, and, you know, one of the things that we are battling now is, you know, there's, in the last couple of years, one of the things that we're trying to point out is, you know, I mean, obviously we've been trying to solve poverty for 60 years. You know, let's solve poverty. Everybody tries to solve poverty. But, you know, the method development hasn't worked. You know, currently it's the whole technology philosophy that if you give them microcredit or, you know, mosquito nets or malaria pills, that's going to solve poverty. And, you know, what you have is people like Jeffrey Sachs, who I'll let Philippe get into that more specifically, but Jeffrey Sachs wrote the book The End of Poverty, period. Make sure to ask him that question when he comes on. But, you know, everybody and so many people involved with, you know, anti-poverty movements are all believing, you know, all sort of, they want to help and then they believe that these are the solutions. But, you know, mosquito nets are not going to end poverty. It's going to help people. It's going to help people and it's important, but it's not going to end poverty. Poverty is not going to end until the system is changed.
Well, you got to wonder if they ever want to really end it. I mean.
Well, that's a good question as well, because just like the cancer business, the cancer industry, it's an industry.
Industry, sure. That's what it is.
And a lot of people are employed, you know, by it. I mean, of course, there are a tremendous amount of people that are doing good work and, you know.
Oh, sure.
Mean well with what they're doing, you know, and their hearts are in it and all that stuff, but.
But when it's being directed by corruption at the top, greed for profit, you know, there's only so far they can go.
Correct.
Yeah. It is a sad world, you know. It would be nice if it worked the way that we're told it works, wouldn't it?
Well,
and
especially recently, I mean, we've all seen it as this sort of lack of concern for humanity. You know, I mean, our system of capitalism, and don't get me wrong, I'm an American capitalist born, but, you know, you can hear it in people, they just don't care about other people.
Well,
you know,
capitalism,
I mean,
run amok without any restraint anymore. You know, government is supposed to exist to hold in check these powers from abusing you know, the system, but no, they're laying out the red carpet for them to continue with these kind of policies. In fact, as your film points out, you know, our military is often utilized to defend the interests of big money under the guise of whatever, you know, containing communism it used to be, and now it's fighting terrorism, but it's really just a cloak, a smokescreen for other hidden agendas.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, regime change is an effective tool to keep control of assets and resources.
Yeah.
And one of the people in our film, which I'm sure you noted, is John Perkins, who
Confessions of an Economic Human, excellent book.
He explained exactly. I mean, for me, it was very eye-opening because, you know, he breaks down the system. You know, he explains that, you know, there's sort of a systematic process. It wasn't accidental that they became indebted.
Sure.
You know, maybe in the beginning, I'm sure, yes, I mean, in the beginning, I'm sure back under McNamara, they thought that these would really make a difference. And, you know, but it's always about our, you know, ultimately whatever we do is about our interests. You know, our interests being American business interests, not necessarily, you know, the taxpayers of America, but American business interests. and, you know, so the role that the corporations and then hence the government plays, I mean, you know, ultimately, us, like so many people, including Michael Moore's film, you know, we're pointing towards the multinationals and the big businesses as being the ones that are really manipulating this profit-seeking behavior.
It's very timely, too, that your film came out at this time, because, of course, Mike Moore's film just came out recently, you know, dealing with this very issue of capitalism.
It's
so disgusting.
I think for many people, you know, it's probably the first time, because, you know, he obviously has a huge fan base, and so it's, for many people, it's the first time that, you know, I mean, it's been very interesting for the last 6 months, to sort of watch this capitalism as a system become, some people understand that for the first time, that there, you know, there's an economic system, and that economic system is capitalism, you know, and so there must be other systems, right? And to have people even start to talk about, like, socialism or more, you know, whatever terminology of capitalism that they choose to use.
Right.
So it's been really interesting. And, of course, his films are hugely important in that, you know, for millions of people, you know, it's going to help sort of trigger that thought, like, hey, capitalism isn't always great. You know what I mean?
Well, another reason your film is so timely, too, is, yeah, with this bailout thing going on. I mean, apparently they're turning us into a third world country now as well.
Exactly. I mean, you see it at every level. I mean, one of the things I read or saw most recently that to me points out this sort of rich taking care of the rich and the poor be damned is, I don't know, you know, when the whole H1N1 virus, you know, getting the inoculation, you know, when there was a crisis that there wasn't enough inoculation, and it came out that Wall Street was delivered first. Did you hear that? Wall Street was delivered dosages.
Sure.
Before the pregnant women, the school children, and the elderly, which is what which they said was the priority. Isn't that hilarious?
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
like
of course
those,
it was.
Like the sinking of the, I mean the, not the sinking of, but the Titanic, you know, all the wealthy got on the lifeboats and all the poor were left in the lower decks and, you know, they were the first to go.
Right.
The same mentality, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's sort of, you know, the pharmaceutical companies know who, you know, priced their stock, so they took care of number one, you know, their first priority, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really sad, but I mean, at this point, nobody can deny it anymore. I mean, Washington is run by big money, and so their interests are getting served because they're the ones that fund our politicians' campaigns, and they're beholden to their interests. And so all they feed us is rhetoric. It sounds good, but when you look closely at the legislation being passed, there's virtually no legislation anymore that gets passed that actually has anything to do with public interest. It's all private interest. It's all for big money, made to look like it's in our interest, but it really isn't, including, you know, stuff that's going on under Obama's administration. You know, he's got string pullers behind the curtain that aren't always working in our interest, just like under Bush, you know.
Right.
It's sad. It's really, really sad. But let's talk about, and I'm sure when Philippe joins us, he'll have a lot more to say on this, but let's talk about some examples, you know, that you mentioned in your film, of where we have actually driven countries into poverty. You know, again, we make it out to look like we're saving these third world countries from tyrannical regimes, but in reality, very often, we've done the very opposite, haven't we? We've overthrown legitimately elected leaders and replaced them with Washington, or should I say Wall Street-friendly dictators.
Absolutely, and I do, I would, Philippe is much more articulate on this, because that is his core area of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that fuses him passionately. So if we can, let's come back to that when he gets on the phone. I mean, there's multiple examples in the film. I mean, we focus more specifically on, I mean, the countries we went to, there was nothing actively there, but obviously we filmed in Venezuela. And although we didn't put all these elements in the film because, you know, in the end we had to have a 106-minute, you know, we had to be able
to
get to
keep it down.
So
sure.
Yeah, we started off with 3 hours, you know, the first cut was 5 hours and then 3 hours and then we're finally at 106 minutes. But
well, there's just,
you know,
so much to talk about. Yeah, how do you choose what to and what not to include?
Right, and I mean, you know, obviously Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, you know, we didn't speak to him directly, but all the people around him that we did speak to, I mean, you know, you've seen how he's portrayed in American media.
Oh, sure. Demonized. Yeah. Naturally.
And you know, having been there, we were there when he was reelected in 2006, December 2006. I think that's right.
Right, I believe,
that.
Yeah.
You know, we were there on the street, and, you know, the people, the poor people absolutely love him, you know, and because of the programs that he has done by taking back the wealth of the oil, you know, and nationalizing it again and taking the money back and putting it into programs for the poor, which, you know, are truly tremendous. I mean, we walked in the barrios and, you know, I mean, everything could be criticized, of course, but there was, you know, people were telling us, everybody of every age was being educated. They were currently in some form of classes, and, you know, there was the subsidized grocery stores, and there was the medical centers, you know, where people were getting preventative medicine as opposed to just emergency treatment, so their health was better. And you could just see it, you know, every bar, you can see these very telltale signs of these types of things. And, you know, some of the people we spoke to in Venezuela in particular had told us, of course, that you know, Chavez, you know, doesn't sleep in the same place twice, you know, because he's so
sure.
He's actively concerned about his life right now.
Mostly
and obviously,
CIA.
You know, sorry?
Mostly because of the CIA. Bush personally told the CIA, you know, to keep close watch on him and essentially, you know, to look for ways to oust, you know, to get rid of him, to oust him.
Right, and of course, we demonize him in the media, and, you know, because,
sure,
of course, what he offers, and, you know, the Bolivarian Revolution offers a huge threat to us economically.
Right.
And Felipe,
right,
is just about to join us, just so you know, he's going to be joining us any second now.
Oh, excellent. Great. Yeah, you know, and it's not that he has, you know, obviously he doesn't pose a military threat, but he poses a far more serious threat, an ideological threat.
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, with all of the Latin leaders currently taking control or pulling back, you know, whether it's
mm-hmm.
debt issue in Argentina, or if it's the private, you know, taking back the natural resources, like in Bolivia, which is in the film we talk about, the Cochabamba water wars, you know, there's a very active movement happening in Latin America. And, you know, if the countries do all band together, and I know that there's been some conversation, I haven't followed it recently, but about nationalizing, you know, or centralizing some sort of dollar system. Philippe just gave me a note that the line is busy that he's trying to call into.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to switch phones with him right now because he's the one that your listener is going to want to hear.
Okay, well, hopefully we can get you back on. Then maybe back in the studio they can work on that. I don't know why that shouldn't be busy, but hopefully we'll get that straightened out.
Okay.
Let's
do that. Here's Mr. Philippe.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot, Beth.
Hello, Charles. How are you?
Welcome, Philippe. Glad to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you.
We were just touching on a few issues, talking about our involvement. Past and present, you know, in third world countries. We were talking about Venezuela and,
right,
you know, the U.S. Aspirations to silence certain political dissidents down there that pose a threat to. Yeah, it's disgusting. And, you know, how there's a tremendous ignorance in this country. I think people are finally starting to catch on. But, I mean, for decades on end, as you well know, there's been this tremendous ignorance of, you know, what our real modus operandi is when we get involved in these countries. And, you know, it's time that we wake up. I mean, we're fronting the bills for these things. We're sending our kids over there to die for these things. And they have nothing to do with our national interest at all.
No, of course, absolutely. No, it's clear. And, you know, the media are really responsible for that, you know, because
sure.
It's
clear
when you are brainwashed, you know, from morning to end, you know, and thinking that, you know, whatever, that Saddam Hussein was part of 9/11 or that, you know, or that or that Hugo Chavez is a dictator and, you know, and whatever, you know, what do you want
and
to
we,
do? And
we were always told how evil Pravda was in Russia during the Cold War. And, you know, Pravda would drool back then to see what we got now.
absolutely. You know, what's most amazing is that, you know, when, you know, as you know, we did like 30 or 35 festivals around the world, you know, international festival. And, you know, not only here, but even around, you know, here, of course, it's even worse because what I mean is that everybody is like finishing the movie with their mouth open, saying, oh my God, we had no idea, we didn't know. So here, it's specific, in the US, it's specifically like, oh, we had no idea that we were doing that in third world country, that we were killing president. And even some people question that like very strongly, you know, that's not true, we're not killing president and this and that. And I have to explain and give arguments and detailed arguments and this and that, you know. And around the world, I think there is a little bit better knowledge of these kind of things. You know, but there is still no knowledge of this global, you know, this historical thing that I'm trying to explain in the film. Like, it started 500 years ago, it didn't start 20 years ago when, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right,
and, you know,
exactly.
In a way, you know, I think it's why I really wanted to do that because, you know, the... And by the way, if you want to talk again with Beth, let me know why she's right here in the room. And
sure. Well, I'm hoping that she'll be able to call in on the other line, and we'll have the three-way thing.
Work. You know, this she just tried, and it's busy again.
It's still busy. It's still busy. Huh?
Yeah.
I don't know
unless
why.
Unless I don't have the right number, it's 530-772-5154.
I believe that's it. I don't know what's going on. Well, we can certainly pass the phone back and forth, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Because I could put it on a speaker.
You know what? I guess I was just told to have her try during the break.
Okay. All right.
We'll work that
no
out during the break.
No
sure.
Problem.
So, and that's only in about 10 minutes or so.
Right, right.
I'm actually getting some questions. Actually, before I get to some of the questions I'm getting here through text, I had a question myself for you. Did you ever hear of a book called Killing Hope by author William
Bloom? Yes, of course.
That's a beauty.
You know, yes, of course. It's a great book. And I even went to interview him for the film, you know, unfortunately, with like a lot of other actors.
Yeah, to cut things out, yeah.
Exactly. But it's, he's great. He was great. And, you know, it's why, by the way, I don't know if Beth told you, but we even decided to publish a book to collect all the interviews which either didn't make it in the film or which made it for a little part, because I was feeling so bad with all these experts and even the poor people, you know, who talk with us for an hour and a half each month.
Yeah.
You know, that we could put just...
That's a great idea, sure.
So we published a big book which was just released called Why Global Poverty, and that's incorporate not only the transcript of the film but also all these interviews in extenso, you know, so people can read them. And
Did you mention that at the end of the film, that people can get a book and read up further?
No, because we did the book.
It was already released before.
We took the book with us, like in all the Q&As. You know, we have been doing Q&As in New York right now because we just opened last week, and you know, very successfully, I have to say.
Excellent. Because I'm sure a lot of people after seeing the film are going to want to read more into this and become more educated.
I think so too.
Yeah. But definitely for our listeners, you want a book that goes into explicit detail, proving, there's no question about it, every single Cold War military enterprise had to do with money. That's all it ever was, you know. It
absolutely
was just
I think
facade.
It has more to do with, you know, I think it has more to do with resources than money per se.
Well, sure.
Yeah, you know, what I try to show in the movie is that, in fact, we entrapped ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, the system we created trapped us entirely because, you know, if you think about it, you have all these small countries. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, okay, you're here. Okay.
I'm here,
like weird noise. Okay. All these small countries that our ancestors came from, like, you know, like Spain and Portugal and France and United Kingdom and even worse, Belgium and Holland, you know, that they were able to build like these huge empires from small countries with no resources whatsoever. So how did they do that? Not because they were so intelligent that, you know, they did that because they were able to steal all the resources from the countries of the South, transforming their people in slaves, you know. But now we are in a situation where we cannot function without these resources. You know, if let's say for the sake of argument, like all the countries of the South unite tomorrow and say, hey, we will not give you access to our resources anymore, the northern economies collapse immediately. United States, Europe, Japan, Korea, etc.
Sure.
You know? And that's what we have to realize is not only that, you know, we need these resources, but that we are, you know, we are shooting ourselves in the foot every day because, you know, as if there's a key expert in the film with Serge Latouche who says at the end, you know, we are consuming today 30% more than what the planet can regenerate.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a very, very serious situation. Because it simply means, you know, as I say, it's a mathematical issue. It's not even a political issue anymore or an ethical issue. It's, of course, as a consequence.
Do you think, though, that there's really a need for these resources, or is it just simply greed? They want it all.
I think there is a need. You know, look, again, this, you know, I'm not talking about the United States specifically, but, you know, half of the countries of the North don't have these resources. We need Colton for our cell phone and our computers. We don't have that.
Most of the resources are in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah, that's
exactly
true.
Exactly, you know. Yeah. And the problem is that, you know, if we're consuming more than what the planet can regenerate because, you know, the world population increases every year, it means that we will have to plunge more and more people below the poverty line in the countries of the source year after year. You know, it's mathematical. You know what I mean? You know, we're consuming more than we can regenerate. So it's simple. It's
like, isn't it sad? You know, movies like Gandhi have become popular in this country, and rightly so. I mean, we need to know about that. But you know, we're never told about what our own government is doing. In fact, what we have done is far worse than what the British did in India, you know.
I'm not sure. I see it a little bit as the same thing over and over. I think we just switch tools. You know, not anymore by way of the gun.
Yeah, I guess worse in the sense of we've been involved in far more countries than the Brits were, you know.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll tell you what, we got a few questions coming in here. We got a break coming up in a few minutes, but we got time for a couple questions here. This first one is John in Arkansas, and he asks, the Prime Minister of Japan declared that the U.S. is the cause of the entire global economic crisis. Does your film touch on this?
So the question is, do I think that the U.S. is the cause for
the global economic crisis? Yeah, does your film touch on it?
Well, you know, honestly, I don't think the U.S. is the only cause. Is it the one cause? Probably, of course.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, I think it's what we have to understand, and it's why I made it like that, even if it was a little bit difficult to put together, is that we have to understand that it's not something recent. It's something which started in the 15th century. You know, in the 15th century, it was the Spanish and the Portuguese, and after it was the French and the British, and after the Dutch and the Belgium, you know, went around the world and started this system. And we just continue to perpetuate this system, you know, century after century, and the U.S. just took over the system and just changed the tools. You know, now we are not forcing anymore these countries by way of the gun. We are forcing them by, you know, creating these fake debts, as John Perkins explained in the film, or by forcing them to privatize their assets, or by forcing them to open their market to our product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have, like, you know, tons, and that's what the movie was made for, is to explain that, in fact, we just changed the tools. You know, we are exactly in the same situation as before. So I don't think, if you want, meaning, of course, is the U.S. responsible, you know, mainly for this crisis? Yes, but not as a country. They are responsible because they are trying to maintain a system which is already dead. You know, we cannot.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of experts in the film who think that unless we radically change the system, you know, we are going toward a major explosion.
Yeah, this current system.
Nothing will work anymore.
It's just not sustainable. It's just not sustainable.
Of course, absolutely. You know, again,
John Perkins really did do a tremendous work. I mean, he added a whole new dimension to the thing that a lot of people who are already aware of this type of stuff didn't know about. You know, I mean, this factor of the economic hitman.
Absolutely. That's why he was always for me the keynote speaker of the movie, if I can say, because if you want, there is a difference between us making theories and him saying, "Well, I did it," and I'm going to tell you how I did it. You know?
Right.
Because he feels responsible for the assassination of two leaders in the world. You know,
and
he explained why, because he wasn't able to turn them around. You know, and you know.
Right.
So I think it was very important that we understand that, no question.
We have time, I guess, for one more question before we go to the break. This comes from Laura in Florida. She asks, what do you think of Nobel Peace Laureate Mohamed Yunus' system of microeconomics, putting the banks and money back in the hands of the people as a solution?
The microcredit, I know it's a question that I have very often. And I have to say, you know, I think it's great. I can tell you we were so shocked when we came back from Kibera, Kenya, that Beth decided to create her own microcredit system to help the people there. So we're totally convinced about that. But let's be real, it will not change anything. It will help, of course, we help probably several dozen people. Mohamed Yunus probably helps, you know, several hundreds of thousands of people. And that's great for them, of course. It's wonderful. And we should kiss his feet. But at the end of the day, it will not change anything because it will not change the system. The system is, you know, again, was built over 500 years and is based on this permanent transfer of resources from the south to the north. you know, as Susan George says in the film, you know, the South finance the North, not the other way around. And unless
right.
we change that, you know, it's why I say all the time, I think we have to realize that it's a much more dramatic problem than global warming. You know, and I'm not minimizing global warming, of course. You know, we know that because of global warming, people will start to die in 10, 20, 30 years massively. But people have been dying massively for the last 50 years because of the poverty issue, because of this transfer of resources.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And the question is, you know, the last card of the film is 20,000 children die every single day because of poverty-related causes. You know, how many more will we allow to die just because we want to maintain our comfortable lifestyles in the North?
Right.
That's the right question.
Right, right. I mean, where's the humanity in this? You know, it's obvious that the politicians have a good thing going along with their buddies on Wall Street. They're not going to stop. So it's,
oh, absolutely.
It's we the people
and
that have
know,
to take a stand.
You know, what is also important to realize, you know, and, you know, I always take the example of Michael Moore's film, like Capitalism, because no matter how much I respect and admire Michael Moore, you know, I think he makes a mistake in the way that he presents the film, because if the issue is they are bad people doing bad things, that doesn't bring us anywhere. Because, you know, I can tell you, you can change all the bankers in Wall Street and all the guys who work with them, and other ones will come, because the system is geared that way. It's not the people who are bad. Of course, they are bad, too. That's another thing. But, you
right.
know, the system makes it that way, not the bad people who are handling the banks and the insurance companies.
Yeah, absolutely. No question.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they're after is profit, and the system doesn't have compassion.
No, that's for sure. No, and
right.
the system is, again, I don't think today, I think today we have to understand that based on this system, we do not have the choice. Again,
right.
without the resources of the South, it does not work.
Right.
So, you know, so either we, and so therefore, because of, again, we are consuming more than we can regenerate, it means that we are killing every day hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
You know,
and
you know,
it's just mad.
So either we change the system, or we have to agree that that will be the case, and we will kill more and more people in the countries of the South, you know, in order to maintain this level of consumption, this level of waste, this level of, you know, and this lifestyle, simply.
Right.
You know.
I agree. I'll tell you what, Philippe, we're going to take a break, and hopefully during the break we'll get Beth back on with us so we can have a three-way conversation going. So
very good.
Stick with us, folks, and we'll be right back with our great guests.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes,
we
can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes,
we
can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution. If you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economists on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime.
When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the world food program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the People Speak radio show. This is your guest host, Charles Giuliani, filling in for Vasima. We're talking this evening with director Philippe Diaz and Beth Portello, producer of a new and groundbreaking film, The End of Poverty. Just before the break, we were discussing, you know, our involvement in third world countries and how it hasn't been what we've been told it was. It's not about spreading freedom and democracy. It's about stealing natural resources in other countries and how this is resulting in not only devastating economies of these already impoverished countries. They're actually not impoverished. They have a lot of rich resources, but they've been stolen from them. But it's been resulting in the death of, you know, probably by now millions of people. It's just a horrible tragedy. So, yeah, let me go to another question we have here, and then after that I want to talk about some of the countries specifically in your film that you mentioned and, you know, the havoc that has been wreaked down there. This comes from Sheila in Australia. She asks, what country did the producer feel was the model of fair treatment of the poor?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of the question.
What country did you feel was the model of fair treatment of the poor? In other words, was there any country where you didn't see this type of thing going on?
Probably. Not in the one we visited, no, because specifically we chose this country because of the problem they had. You know, so I would say we saw a lot of improvement, you know, no matter if we like Hugo Chavez or not, in Venezuela, definitely. You know, because, you know, like, for example, and it's an interesting example, you know, there is a large majority of poor people even in Caracas who live in the barrio, which are in the center of town and around town. And what these people have seen a tremendous, tremendous change of life in the last 5 years. And I'll tell you, it's very concrete things. Number one, they have the right now to vote. They always had theoretically the right to vote, but in order to vote, you need an ID card. And in order to have an ID card, you have to have a permanent address. And all the barrio addresses were not, until Chavez considered, permanent addresses. So the people didn't have the right to vote.
And I bet they don't have rigged Diebold machines down there either.
No, they do. You know what is interesting? Not the same ones, of course, I hope for them. But, you know, we were there during the last election, you know, which reconfirmed Chavez in 2006. And you know, they have a very great system. They have these electronic machines, but the electronic machine provide a paper ballot that the person can check, and they put it in a box. So they can be recounted if there is a doubt about the electronic machine. You know, so that's very interesting. The other improvement that they saw is that they have now access to free healthcare. You know, they never saw a doctor. Most of these people never saw a doctor in their entire life. Number one, because the traditional, you know, Venezuelan doctor never wanted to go to the barrio because, first of all, it was supposed to be very dangerous, which it is in a way, you know.
Sure. And not as many McDonald's down there.
And number two, they knew they would never be paid. You know, so all the people of the barrio never saw a doctor. So now they have doctors because Chavez did the exchange with Cuba, give me some doctor, I'll give you some oil. You know, so now at every 10 block of barrio, they have a little hospital, which is free, of course, where they can have regular care or even surgery. You know, next to it, they have a supermarket with subsidized food, which is selling all the staple food at 40% usually off the regular price. And next to it, they have a little communication center with free internet for everybody. You know, and all these are major, major improvements. And the number one improvement, I think, which is even more important than otherwise, as important, is that everybody is in school. We were so surprised, you know, from 5 years old to 75 years old, everybody's in school learning something.
either a job or regular school or, you know, from literature to whatever, you know, and that, of course, free, of course. And that is, of course, very interesting. So, you know, so I would say in terms, it's not a model, of course, because there are a lot of problems, but, you know, it's definitely the best improvement that we saw through our travel, definitely.
No wonder they don't like Chavez.
Yeah, too bad.
He's making them look bad.
Well, you know, I understand that if you are a wealthy middle class person in Venezuela, it's maybe harder than it was before because you don't have access to the same luxury and the same, you know, benefits that you had before. But I can tell you, for all the poor people, it's definitely a major improvement.
Wow. So, briefly, and then I, of course, toward the end of the show, I want to discuss, solutions that you talk about in the film, but just give us a brief summary of some of the countries that you discuss in the film and, you know, what has gone on over there driving these people into the mess of poverty that they're stuck in.
Sure. Beth, do you want to answer that?
Philippe, that's your focus.
Okay, all right.
Beth, I didn't forget about you there.
no worries. Philippe's the best. He'll enjoy
that's
it.
His specialty, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know, what's going on over there, you know, in a way, you know, and I, of course, meaning I can summarize the countries, we spend most of our time in Venezuela, Bolivia, Brazil, and, you know, Brazil is a very huge country. We went all over the place in Brazil, and Kenya and Tanzania. And we chose this country specifically because we wanted to address certain issues, like, for example, the land issue, and the land issue is number one resource in Kenya. So, of course, that's why we went there, because they don't have anything else than land. So, of course, there was major, and as you saw in the movie, we developed a lot of this issue related to land. So that's why we chose this country. And I would say, in terms of, you know, because again, I really wanted to go back to historical, you know, to history and show that, you know, that started 500 years ago. You know, I don't think that we saw major differences. Because, you know, the number one resource is the land, and everywhere people were dispossessed and pushed away and lost their land. You know, like, for example, there is Okotogendo, who is this professor, this law professor of, you know, he's the chair of the law university in Nairobi, Kenya. He unfortunately just died. He was a very interesting man. And he specialized in land law. And he told us, he said, you know, from, in fact, the worst part that the British brought in Kenya was not about, you know, taking the land, or it was not even about enslaving people, it was not about even killing people, it was imposing the concept of private property. And it's very interesting because he said before that, you know, as you saw in the film, you know, the British had a very interesting way to take control of the land. They had a law, they had part of the British law was saying that in the country where there is no settled form of government, the land belonged to the Queen of England. Which is, you know, there was even an economist who made a study showing that, in fact, the Queen of England is the biggest landowner in the world, which is, okay, so put that aside for a second,
right.
Which I think is very funny, but it's very interesting. It's very revealing in their way of doing things. So, you know, so when they arrived, he explained, when they arrived in Kenya, of course, they decided there was no settled form of government, so therefore they took control of the land. And he said what they missed, well, they missed because it was very convenient, of course, what they didn't understand is that we had a very strong, settled form of government, which was based on tribal law. And tribal law would give anybody, part of a community, permanent access to land as a right, as a fundamental right, which could not be taken away from this person as long as he or she was part of the community. And not only they had this right, but their children would get the same right and their grandchildren would take the same right. The right to land, to do whatever they had to do, doesn't matter if it was grazing cattle or building a house or growing food, that was a permanent right which could not be taken away. And he said, the moment you impose private property, all that is gone. And of course, you know, there was a lot of studies, there was like eminent economists who said, well, you know, the solution is give back land to people and give them a title, which is nice, it's a great concept, but as long as the title can be sold, of course, if your family is starving, you will sell the land. There's no, you don't have the choice. You know, so I think, unfortunately, and that's what Okotogendo told us, he said, you know, this tribal system where you have access to land, and it's the same concept of the commons, is managing the resources in commons. We talk a lot about that in the film, you know, is the only way which guarantees, you know, access to resources to people, is managing that in commons. As long as you bring private property, that is gone. You know, and that, you know, even, you know, I got Amartya Sen, you know, this eminent, you know, scholar, you know, to talk about that. He said, well, you know, of course, it's, you know, if you wipe out private property, you won't solve everything. But the one who brought this concept had a very, very serious idea in mind. Because, of course, that, you know, the concept of the private property stopped the beginning of poverty. You know,
yeah.
Because, of course, you know, as Cliff Kopp says in the film, you know, why would all these resources which are given to us by nature would be owned by very few people or very few corporations? You know why?
Well,
you know, okay, fine. So let's say someone invest and take care of a resource like oil or anything like that. You know, and we totally understand that because they invest, they have to make a profit out of it. Okay, fine. So, but how much profit should we let them make? Like, twice their money, 10 times their money, 100 times their money, 1,000,000 times their money? You know, I think we are, you know, if you look at the capitalist system as it is today, you know, you look at it from a distant point of view and say, okay, let's put everything on the table and just look at it, it's pure insanity. You know,
which
is, of course, you know, as we said, you know, as Martin Sheen says at the end of the film, you know, it's a system which is based on the fact that poor people finance the system. That's the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we have a minimum wage. Why isn't there a maximum wage?
Yes, of course.
But
you know, if you think about it, no matter what happens, it will always be the poor pay.
Yeah.
You know, because when the oil price is high, the poor pay. And when there is benefit to be made, the rich take the benefit. When there is a loss to be taken, the poor take the loss.
Sure.
It's like, look at the banking system today. You know, we are talking about healthcare in America. You know, it's the biggest absurdity of all. Look at what's going on. We cannot afford, according to Congress, of course, we cannot afford, you know, to give free healthcare to all when it's given in tons of small countries around the world, including Cuba, who has nothing, right?
Right.
You know?
Right.
But we can afford to give $6 trillion to bankers, you know,
and
insurance companies.
We're being scammed, and that's all there is to it.
Of course.
I think it was John D. Rockefeller that once said, I'd rather have a dime from the pocket of every poor man than a dollar from the pocket of every rich.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, and the system is built like that. That's what we have to understand. You know, it's like, you know, so, and again, but because of this consumption resource, this consumption pattern of the resources that I explained at the beginning, we are consuming 30% more than what the planet can regenerate. We are right now digging a gigantic hole under our feet. And hope that by miracle we will not fill in the hole.
We've got a situation where the parasite has become bigger than the host.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
Sucking the life out of you can't sustain this. It just
absolutely
can't be done.
Unless, again, as I said, unless we kill more and more people in the countries of the South, that's the only way.
Right.
You know, if we want to maintain this lifestyle that we have, the type of consumption, the type of waste, the type of accumulation of resources in the North. You know, because let's not kid ourselves. There are plenty enough resources to feed everybody. But there's no problem about that.
Right.
There was even a study that Susan George, who is in the film, sent me recently. If all the arable land in the world was split evenly between all the people of the planet, everybody would have access to the space, the equivalent of a football field and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a football field and a half is a huge amount of space to grow your food.
Right.
You know, so trust me, there would not be any problem of famine and of hunger if everybody had the football field and a half to grow its own food. You know, so there are plenty of resources. That's not the problem. The problem is the type of system we created which wastes them, and of course the consumption pattern that we have in the countries of the North, of course.
Well, that's
why we bring the solution.
That really boils my blood. I'm sure you heard of this. Our government does it. Governments all over Europe, the Canadian government has done it. They order farmers every year to destroy millions of tons of perfectly edible produce just to artificially raise the stock values. It's unbelievable.
You know, I think it's Ronald Reagan who said one time he was confronted by a journalist because he refused to send food to a famine at the moment. I forget what it was. And Ronald Reagan said, look, I will only send free food if it can open a market. If not, I will not.
Yeah.
It's very clear. You are, at least he was honest.
there you go. Right. Anyway, I guess this next question we'll give to Beth here. Sorry, Beth, didn't mean to. I actually forgot to welcome you back at the end of the last break there. We had lost you there for a while. I'm glad to have you back. Beth, let's talk for a few minutes here. We got another, less than 10 minutes. Let's talk about some of the solutions that you pose in the film. And, of course, if there's any websites or anything else you'd like to plug, feel free to go ahead and do that.
Sure. I mean, I don't think that we covered that we're currently in U.S. theaters. We opened last weekend, and we'll be expanding. We opened in New York with a very strong box office, which was in large part due to the support of the grassroots of the social justice movement, of educators, and of course in the media, independent media. We had, you know, great support in New York from independent media such as you guys, and you know, that makes a tremendous difference for these types of films. We're opening in Los Angeles on 11/25 in two theaters, and then we expand from there into Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Denver, and Austin, and that's all at our website, which is www.theendofpoverty.com. But I know you have an international audience as well, and, you know, sort of leapfrogging off of our U.S. release, we hope to, we will be released in France mid-December. We have a screening in the U.K., on December 12th, which will be a big event at the BFI South Bank. There's been a lot of interest from Australia from your last caller, but we currently don't have a distributor in Australia, but we hope to work something out there. But we're hearing from people all over the world who want to have this film brought to their country and be able to do things, you know, to help explain the system. Solutions, since I totally went off track there, we do have those on our website as well. You know, everybody wants a nice solution that they, you know, to take action and something that they can make, you know, use of, you know, something that's personalized, if you will. But the film ultimately says the system is not going to, you know, poverty is not going to end until the system changes. So solutions like microcredit and mosquito nets, as I mentioned earlier, or fertilizer, is, you know, it's not going to change the system. So the things that we offer in the film, you know, the solutions that are presented in the film are macro solutions, including ending the debt, of course, which, you know, is an important element, you know, obviously to let the countries of the South take control of their finances again. I mean, the Philippe probably can quote this better, but the Bolivian, Philippe, do you know those numbers off the top of your head, what the Bolivians are repaying in debt every day?
No, not every day, but I think he says that there is a Bolivia $6 billion debt right now.
And this is World Bank and IMF debt, isn't it?
Yes, of course, of course. It was debt, you know, which was made when, you know, all these debts are, you know, all the debt are part of the system of privatization and loan, etc. It's like what John Perkins explained, or Eric Toussaint, or whatever. You know, they explain clearly that is that every time that we give a loan to a country, we say, "Oh, it's great! Look, we are helping the poor people there." Now, because we ask something else in exchange. You know, we say, "Okay, we'll give." You know, that's the example of Bolivia and the water war. You know, that you have clearly in the film. You know, that, you know, when they needed like funds from the IMF said, "Okay, fine, we will give you this loan, as long as you privatize your water." And that's
oh, right, and then
water.
They raise the cost of the water. Oh, that's
exactly. Bechtel started, you know, the water was in the region of Qatar.
It's all bribery to sink them even further in the hole, ultimately.
No, no, of course, you know, and you know, so it's why when we say, you know, there was a lot of talk about cancellation of debt, it has to be unconditional. Because all the first cancellation of debt which were brought out, it was always in exchange of more privatization, more...
It's a noose they hold around their neck. I mean, these people make the mafia blush.
Oh, of course, absolutely. Absolutely. Is that there? So, Beth, you want to continue the other solutions?
But most Americans don't understand. You know, we think, well, we need to be repaid back, or most people don't understand the debt dynamic. I mean, the other solutions, again, they're all focused on economic justice, and not, you know, as opposed to, like, charitable solutions. So, first, it's both in the film and on our website, is forgive international debt. Second is to change the tax system in every country of the world, so that the taxes fall on property ownership and not on the wages of the working people.
Sure.
We often,
and the consumption, of course.
Right.
I mean, the working class is the backbone of any country, and they're the ones that are being waged war against, you know? I mean, it's totally backwards. I think we have time for another question. This kind of ties in with what we're discussing right now. Sandy in Arizona asks, do you feel that they will reach a boiling point where the poor of the world will revolt as they have in the past, as an example in the French Revolution?
Well, they have already revolted. You know, it's called, there's a lot of social movement, number one, but it's also called terrorism. John Perkins always says, you know, when we do this Q&A with him, he always says, look, during my life as an economic hitman, I met a lot of terrorists. I never met one who wanted to be a terrorist. You know, these people are not, you know, we love in the North to paint them as religious fanatic, that they all probably do, you know, but they use religion as a conduit. You know, the real reason for which they are terrorists is because they have enough of the oppression. You know, you can see your family starving and dying for up to a point. There is a moment where you can't take it anymore.
Yeah, they're lashing out the other way they know how. Sure, sure.
Of course.
And what's the solution? We go back and do more of the same stuff, invade their countries, take more resources.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing in Afghanistan.
Of course. And it's why the last solution of the film, there are a lot of others that we bring, like, you know, from, you know, agrarian reform to, you know, there are a lot of macro solutions like that. But the ultimate solution is what this expert says at the end. It's called degrowth. Our system is based on permanent growth. And that is an absurd concept because, of course, you need to grow when you are underdeveloped. But when you are overdeveloped, you don't need to grow because growing when you are overdeveloped exactly does what I was explaining, digging a hole under your feet. You know, and the problem, because now we know that the planet has finite resources and that we're already over these resources, you know, unless we degrow. Degrow doesn't mean necessarily drive more and eat less. You know, degrow means rethinking the way we live our life. As Serge Latouche says all the time, it means like maybe working less. What if we work 5 hours a day rather than 12? So of course we will consume less, but maybe we'll consume better. What if we consume locally grown product? And, you know, there are a lot of systems in the world who started to implement these kind of ideas, you know, like a lot of communes who are starting to manage resources in common and this and that. And it doesn't mean, it doesn't change the privacy of people. It doesn't change their access to food or anything else. You know, it's just another way of managing these resources.
Right, right.
So I think that's a very important thing also that I think people should start to think about is that, you know, Serge Latouche, for example, the one who explained the growth, thinks that we are going toward this massive explosion. He told me, it's not in the film, but he told me during the interview, he said, I wake up every day wondering if it's for today or for tomorrow. Because, you know, all these experts predicted the crisis we went through, you know, in the last year. You know, and we started our interview, you know, in 2006. You know, it took us 3 years to make this film. You know, they all knew that we were going toward this crisis. And the real estate bubble is just a very, very small part of the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
You know, we will have crisis after crisis after crisis until the final crisis, of course.
Yeah.
Unless we change our system. We will have more and more war resources, you know, as Okoto Gendo says in the film, and more terrorism. You know, we don't have the choice. We have to change the system. If not, we are going toward a major disaster.
Sure. Well, we're running out of time, unfortunately, but I want to thank you both for coming on and for the great work you're doing. Good luck with the film.
Thank you for having us.
It's going to create a greater awareness of what's going on. It's time to strip this facade away. You know, they just can't get away with this anymore. It's been going on for way too long, and it's affected and ruined the lives of millions of people around the world. It's got to stop.
Absolutely.
It's the new dark ages.
Yes,
yep.
We are going back to dark ages if we don't change it. Definitely.
Sure, sure. Anyway, congratulations to the both of you.
Thank
Keep
you
up
again.
The good work, and we'll be watching. Hopefully you'll have more stuff like this coming out in the future, but this is a powerful film. It's very much needed at this time. So thank you very much, and again, all the best to both of you.
Thank you
so much.
Bye.
Okay, folks, that's all the time we have for today. Join us again next week for another great guest here on the People Speak Radio on VBS. For now, this is your guest host, Charlie Giuliani, signing off. Good night, folks.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the table by the relief office I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering how this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest, to the Gulf Stream water, yeah, this land is made for you and me.